Welcome to Why Is This Good, a podcast by the Naples Writers Workshop. I'm Christine and I'm here with John. Hey, John.
Hello.
Okay, it is my turn, and I chose a story called Zombie by Joyce Carol Oates. And I'm ashamed to say it took me to the entirety of reading said story to realize it was based on Jeffrey Dahmer. Oops.
Oh, was it?
Yes, but I had to confirm that. I didn't want to just assume. And then I was doing math. I was like, when was this published? When did it come out?
She had very specific dates in there. I didn't watch that. Was it Netflix did a thing on Dahmer? I did not
Yeah.
watch those. I didn't realize he did brain or was trying to do brain surgery on him.
Yeah. He did it about as well as this guy did. And then I was also reading things. So the story that I picked is a short story in The New Yorker, and it was published in 1994. But when I was looking the story up online after having read it to kind of like see what other people thought, most people had read what is, I guess, a novella version of this. And I couldn't find much on the short story reaction. I would say like the novella reactions were bad. Most people were like, this is like a single note story, and it's like, whatever. I don't think it's anyone's favorite of Joyce Carol Oates.
So would she just basically expand this and make it longer or bigger or?
Yeah. And I guess like when you Google zombie, it, like I said, it's mostly talking about the novella. It almost always describes it as being written in journal entry form. And this is like devoid of those details. This is like first person, but it's not
Yeah.
dated and timed, and it's not chronological or anything. So I think that's kind of lost in this version.
Or happily avoided.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of stories like that. And I think that was a lot of the criticism, was that it was like a single note story. It just kind of went on and on.
I can see these being like undated journal entries.
Yeah, they do read that way, but
Yeah.
I mean, what's missing is they're not dated. So how am I supposed to know that? Like, so
Yeah.
I do think the novella is much different, is the point. So that's kind of the setup. And I'll read a horrifying section. If you don't like graphic stuff, this is not the story for you. One time, one of them was fighting the drug, his eyes rolling sideways in his head like marbles, saying, "Hey man, I guess I don't want to do this, okay? Let me go, man." And I told him he could stay for a while. It was all right to stay for a while, and I'd pay him for his trouble. And he said he wouldn't tell anybody if I let him go, but I knew better. And I tightened the cord so big his eyes bulged, and his skin was ashy plum, and the lips I could not take my eyes off were ashy, and it started shooting through me like electricity. He knows, he's caught on, no turning back, which is the point that must be reached, the threshold of the black hole that sucks you in. A fraction of a second before and you are free, but a fraction of a second later and you are sucked into the black hole, and my dick hard as a club and big as a club, and the sparks of my eyes, and I did not stammer as I had when first he swung into the van, the cool dude eyeing Whitey. It was two barbiturates I gave him, mashed and in vodka. I said, "I am not a sadist. I am not a torturer. I think you are terrific. I ask you to cooperate and you will not be hurt." I was excited. I had to unzip. He saw and he knew. "You know even when you don't. I will not hurt you," I said, "if you lay still." But he was struggling. He was crying. I saw he was just a kid, maybe 19 years old. I jammed the sponge into his mouth so he was almost choking, and I had to be careful. I did not want to lose him. He was tied, he was drugged, and should have been anesthetized, but it was taking too long. He was in the tub naked and the water was running, and that freaked him. He knows, though he did not see the ice pick yet, which I had hidden. Snaky supple kid with a gold filling and a front tooth, and I'd brought him to the apartment with a promise of home-cooked food and vodka, and he'd been thinking he'd be sucked off by Whitey and paid for his trouble and maybe clear out Whitey's possessions, but that's not how it came about. And the panic in his eyes said that this was so. Reddish kinky hair and a red sheen to his skin like ox blood shoe polish. Good looking, and he knew it, but it's too late now. I secured his head in the clamp and brought the ice pick to his right eye, lifting the eyelid as Dr. Freeman described. But when I inserted it, he struggled and screamed through the sponge, and there was a gush of blood, and I came. I lost control and came so hard I kept coming, and coming like a convulsion. I couldn't stop or even breathe. I was groaning and gasping for air, and when it was over, I was in control again. I saw the damage I had done. The ice pick rammed up to the hilt in his eye, up into his brain, and he was dying. He was dead. Another fuck up and no zombie. And then the disposal of, the heavy weight of, a downer. Must drive at the speed limit and obey all traffic regulations and must not act suspicious. A landfill or dump is most strategic, of course, where the ground is already broken and far from home base, 50, 70, 100 miles. The extra effort is worth it, like buying a new wig, whiskers, every time. Vacant lots, wooded areas, near parks, risky because kids play in them. But empty marshland beyond the interstate where nobody ever goes is a good bet. How many times? I kept mementos, but no records. I memorized what's required, then move on, and sometimes forget. But now I have the basement of this old house. So like I said, that's like a really it's probably like the most graphic one. He like revisits a couple murders throughout this. But when people talk about this story, I think those are the sections they're talking about, and those are the sections they're remembering. And then like sort of the rest of it is interactions with his parents, because he talks about how he gets arrested for the one thing, kind of pleads it down, and he's on probation, and his parents are like really hopeful that he'll stop talking to young boys or doing whatever he was doing, and they're trying to get him set up for success. He's working like as a janitor, and he has like this room somewhere, and when they visit him, they try to act like everything's normal, but there's like this tension, right? And the story is just kind of about how this is going on in the meantime, in the background. Some of the chronology is like unclear. Like, was he doing this before he was first arrested, or had he been doing it all along, or did it escalate to this? But by the end of the story, I was like, this is not like my favorite story or anything. I don't think it's like some masterpiece, but we always talk about like the horror and the thriller genres in writing, and I don't know that we've done something like Grotesque. And I feel like this like definitely fits that bill. Like you said, you hadn't seen the Netflix Dahmer special, but like I remember watching that, and like the first episode, it's hard to even watch, and parts of this are hard to read because it's like the final moments, and it's sections like the one I read where the victim is aware of what's about to happen, and that's what's just the worst part to read.
I was thinking about this story in terms of what we talked about in the last episode, and I've mentioned many times before is like the river, the story river, fall into it and you get pulled along. And what is creating that current? What is pushing you forward? The energy that John Gardner called profluence. And for this one, I was thinking it feels almost like the thing that keeps you going is this like attention is kind of a vague word, but I feel like this is kind of like a building menace. You start off and you don't know exactly what's happening, but it feels slightly off. And like as more details keep getting revealed, it becomes more like the character, the situation, everything just feels more and more menacing, more and more just like wrong. And that creates an energy of like, I don't know, curiosity feels like the wrong word, but kind of like a
Like foreboding.
foreboding. That's a good one. Just this like you want to know what is happening, what is going on. And then when it starts to be revealed and like the details begin, like the section you read, it is clear what the menace is.
Exactly.
And that comes, I don't know if it's like halfway or maybe like partway in, where then the menace, the current is like, how far is this going to go? How terrible is this going to be? And there's other elements that come into it as well, like with the parents, like his parents confronting him, like, what's that smell? I can smell something. We talked about how you can't do crazy stuff. What are you hiding? And he plays it off like, so that kind of like discovery, like, when will this be discovered? When will he be caught? That kind of stuff comes into it as well. Because that's like the menace expanding.
He kind of knows, like, this can't be forever. He's already gotten caught once and he knows how serious it's getting.
But just thinking of that as a we talked in the last episode about like a plot driven thing. Sometimes like this is more of a character driven thing because like the events are not in any particular plot order, right? It's not like he is trying to achieve something grotesque, but it's not like that's the story of him trying, like, let's see if I can make a zombie, and like we're gonna watch him go through the process of trying to make a zombie. The story is this guy's a monster. Let's watch a monster. And so it's more of a character drive. Like the flow of the story is driven by the character. And I feel like, what are you revealing about a character that's going to keep the reader moving forward? And like that dawning, the foreboding of menace. I don't know how you would phrase that.
Think
Whatever it
foreboding.
is. Foreboding kind of like is probably
Is
enough. But
menacing.
yeah, that's what keeps you going, which is a good thing to remind ourselves when we're writing. We don't always need like the next action, the next literal conflict with two characters fighting over something.
Sometimes just like stringing it along, waiting is the suspense.
Suspense is not mere conflict either. You can build tension and like forward motion with many different things.
So maybe because Dahmer was such a well-known case, like even as, you know, at the time of this publication, people knew about
Yeah,
Dahmer.
I did not put that together. I saw 1994. I was like, oh, this is an old one. And then I was reading it. And I was like, I had no context for it being Dahmer. Obviously, he was in the news all the time after a certain point, part of the culture.
I think people like me that are into some of this true crime stuff, you know, against my better judgment, like I unfortunately am aware of like who this is, and I've consumed too much about it. So maybe you just avoided like some of the true crime genre that evolved around it, right? Seeing it in the news is one thing and remembering it, but like I feel like I've seen so many versions of someone like Dahmer, and this was the most explicit, and then it was like, was this like actually based on him? Like,
I don't think, yeah, I wasn't aware of the details of the case of what he did.
Yeah.
It was like he was a punchline for a lot of things, like, you know, having
Oh, yeah.
people in the freezers and stuff and like basement and like all this stuff. But it was, this is a long time ago and not in the forefront of mind.
John's like, give me a break. No, it's
I'm not
fine.
always thinking about Jeffrey Dahmer. I
No,
swear.
yeah. And I unfortunately am thinking about it too often. But point being that I think when this story came out, people were so familiar with it that if they
Yeah,
were
it was
seeking
right
out a,
then.
it was right then. And if people were seeking out a story like this about it, they probably went into it knowing exactly what it was. It's probably publicized that way. And I think maybe some of the disappointment in Joyce Carol's take on it could just be that you already know the story. So they're missing what it is she attempted to do with it, which one of the things is the point that you just made, right? If you're reading this and you don't know it's Jeffrey Dahmer, then there is a sense of foreboding. If you know it's Jeffrey Dahmer, then you're kind of rushing along, you know? Maybe you're like missing out on how expertly she's drawn the tension and like unfurled the story. This is not necessarily
Yeah.
for people that know exactly what he did and why he did it. This is like her attempt at understanding like his psyche or whatever behind it. And I think to your point, like there are like these signs early on where we're in his head where we know something's off, but we don't know what or why. And she captures that perfectly, but it's overlooked if you know the bigger plot.
It reminds me of that Emma Klein story we did, White Noise, about Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, I forgot about that one.
When I read that, I remember at a certain point in that story, I was like, oh, come on, I don't want to read about Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a good story, well written.
Yeah, but it is like that, right? Where like you feel just so it's everywhere. You're like surrounded by it. Maybe you don't want to read a story like this. And you know, the Netflix special criticism was that it was just, you know, entertainment at the expense of the victims, right? You know, they're being re-victimized by all this, and that's like believable and understandable. And then like a story like this is just kind of like, why do we want to attempt to understand someone like Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, for the purpose of literary fiction? You know,
Yeah.
it, this is a type of entertainment. So I can also see people like criticizing it from that lens. Like, why are we doing this again? You're like, Joyce Carol Oates is not a criminal investigator that's going to prevent the next Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things like we talk about, you just said it's supposed to be, it's a form of entertainment. And like at bottom, like that's all this ever is. It's just
Yes.
entertainment. It's just like a way to like lazy afternoon. You want to spend half an hour thinking about something else. You read a story. But we tell ourselves, no, literature is big, capital letter important, right? It gives us a glimpse of humanity. It like lets us explore what it means to be human. Like reading is a good thing to do. You have to do it. And there are actually studies that show that people who read more have higher empathy, whether that's causative, whether you get the empathy from reading or you have empathy, therefore you want to read. This is unclear, but there's something to it. And I don't think this podcast could exist if we didn't also believe that writing is stories and fiction is more important than mere entertainment.
Yeah.
So at a certain level, Joyce Carol, it's probably like, I don't get it. Like, who is this guy? Like, how could this happen? And then
Right.
has to figure it out. And for the her way of figuring that out is
Yeah, this is her
writing a
tool
story.
chest.
Yeah, like, let me try to, like, fiction is about getting in someone's head, and like the
Right.
only way we can do it.
Yeah. So I think you and I are on the same page that way. It's just kind of like when you read like some of the criticism on it, it's like I think people are ignoring all the factors around this, the fact that it was popular, the fact that, yeah, this is her attempt at something maybe a little more noble than like just base entertainment.
Prurient interest.
Yeah, there's still something expertly done to bring this horror to life when it comes to like imagining what the victim went through. You know, like these true crime things, even like when you see like interviews with like detectives or whatever, I mean, they'll say a lot of these like repeated phrases. This is the worst case I've ever worked on. I still think about this one. It was horrible, you know? And this goes a little bit further to like show you what it must have been like the struggle or like there is just a new movie that came out with Anna Kendrick where she directed it and it's based on the dating game show Killer. And all the praise for the movie version of this talks about how expertly Anna Kendrick and other actors in the show, actresses, portray like the moment where the victim realizes what's about to happen, where like they're in fear of like this man, where it went from like a sort of like innocuous encounter or a flirting sort of thing or a date, whatever it was. And then there's like this like power dynamic and this shift. And that's what's sometimes missed when like the average person kind of recounts a story like this. They say things like it was gruesome and it was terrible. It should never have happened. She was young and she lit up a room and like all this kind of shit. But like you don't really like maybe always go there in terms of like what it was like life for that person. And like, I'm not saying that that should be portrayed as entertainment, but I'm saying that if it's often missed, then it should be well done at some point. It shouldn't be glossed over. So that's what I appreciate about what makes this horror, is like, we're in Jeffrey Dahmer's head, but we're not experiencing this the way he is. We're not thinking to ourselves, wow, isn't it fun to kill someone? We're empathizing with the victims as it happens, right? And that's what she's expertly done here, is to show us what that was like.
That's a tricky thing to do.
I think so. So like I said, this is not somehow like my favorite story. I don't think everybody should be writing about serial killers and shit. I do think Dahmer's like overdone, whatever. But like, if I was going to pick someone to do it, I'm glad it was Joyce Carol Oates and not, I don't know.
What you just said about empathizing with the victims, thinking about the section you read at the beginning of the episode where he's describing doing what he does with this kid. And there are brief moments where he's describing what the kid's reactions are. Like he was scared. I forget the specifics, but then he also describes what he's doing. So as a reader, where are we focused? What are we empathizing with in that moment, right? It's told in the first person. So ordinarily we're often told as readers, like when you read first person, you empathize with the first person narrator. That's what you do. I don't think we do that.
No.
In this section, I'm empathizing with the victim.
Yeah.
I'm seeing the world through the victim's point of view and imagining how that feels to see the guy looming over you and doing these things. And like, that's what makes it gruesome, is because I get scared on behalf of that victim. I'm living that experience, not the experience of torturing somebody or trying to create a zombie or whatever story he's telling himself that kind of makes it okay in his head. Like, that's an interesting thing. How do you, as a writer, tell it in first person in a way that's going to make the reader empathize with not the first person, but understand the first person as a monster? Part of that is obviously like what he does is monstrous, so you know he's a monster.
Yeah, I think to your point, it's kind of at a certain point, the narrator is so horrible that you can't help but empathize with other characters in the story. And maybe this is just one that's like that clear from the jump, but it reminds me of the one story we read very early on, The Lie.
Oh yeah, T.C. Boyle. Yeah.
So there are stories, I think, that maybe have that narrative trick, but maybe this is just like on the reader that we realize that we're not rooting for the serial killer.
It is an interesting thing, because we were talking earlier about how, why would she write this story? It's like, you want to use the tools you have to get inside of the monster's head. But when we read it and when we experience it, we're not necessarily in his head. We're not necessarily understanding him. We're understanding the horror of him, not necessarily the, like, we're not like, oh, I get it. Yeah, sometimes you want to like pierce people's skulls to make zombies for your own sexual pleasure. I mean, I get it. It's not something I want to do all the time, but
yeah.
we're not reacting like that. We're reacting like, oh my, that's terrible.
Yeah. He's maybe a little more sympathetic at the beginning when he is talking about how he doesn't understand why he wants to do this, or like he knows he got away with something. He's talking about how he doesn't want to disappoint his parents, and he's trying to like stay on the straight and narrow somehow.
That's what I mentioned, the rising menace, right? The foreboding that we have.
Yeah, exactly.
And some of the forward momentum of the story is pushing us farther away from him.
Right.
It's like, oh, we're going to start the story with like, I want to identify with the first person narrator, but the story is going to push me away. And that's going to create its own kind of like conflict tension.
Right. But if you don't know about Dahmer, and if you don't know this is what that's based on, you're still trying to figure it out. Like early on, like there's this section that says, it's hard for me to hug them, especially dad. There's a stiffness in all of our bones, but I do it and I believe I'm doing it correctly. Mom and big sis were crying and there was a stinging moisture in my eyes. So like, we're talking about a guy that's like, I don't know, maybe on the spectrum, maybe just mentally ill, whatever the problem is, he's having trouble connecting with his family who apparently loves him, but he just, you know, doesn't feel the same way. So there are things that make him maybe sympathetic at the beginning, but then literally like 2 pages later, it says, the idea of creating a zombie for my own purposes came to me in a brainstorm. And it's like, okay, wow. And then you kind of think like, I'm reading this and his overall like affect and his tone of voice, like you just can't tell whether he's intelligent, honestly.
Yeah.
He's got some kind of a grasp on some of these medical things and that they're possible. I mean, I kept thinking this was not Dahmer because I was like, are we still talking about lobotomies in the 90s? Like at what point was that like finally like, these don't work?
I don't think they worked in the 90s or the 80s.
That's what I mean. Like the book was written in 42.
Yeah, he was referencing old material.
Yeah. So I'm just like, oh my God, this guy doesn't get it. Like this was such an antiquated approach. This guy's got to be not so bright. You know, how cunning can he be? How convincing can he be? He's having trouble like identifying with people. How successful is he as a killer? You know, all of that to say that like, once you realize he's the bad guy, you can still find yourself identifying with the victim. But even that's like a, there's a skill to that, even that I, as the reader, kind of am wondering these things about him and not just dismissing him as pure evil. He's not pure evil. He has motivations.
I mean, I think the style, the prose style, it really helps kind of build that awkwardness, you know, like the whole beginning of it is these really odd sentences here and there, mostly straightforward, but things are just told and like there's this jumps and disconnects and clipped sentences, like sometimes literally like they seem to be cut in half, but then that melts away into a, it comes back, but there are moments in here where it becomes more of a, like a rushing kind of style, right? Like when he gets really excited about something.
Yeah.
So that seems to be one of the ways in which he's being revealed to us. And if these are diary entries, whatever it is first person. So
yeah, exactly.
You feel it as has his voice as the narrator's voice. So he's being revealed to us in the way, the style in which he's thinking slash writing slash observing the world.
I don't know that I have like some grand takeaway from this other than, like I said, I didn't think that we had so far, like as much horror and thrillers as we've read, as much like stories with tension, like come across something that was truly just like,
horrific.
This is just gore. Yeah, it's gore. And maybe the fact that it's based on a true story makes people not interested in reading it, you know, because it is at some point like re-victimizing victims.
It's real.
It's real. In other situations, maybe this kind of gore is like more interesting. I don't know. But it's, I couldn't tell you the last story I read where I was having trouble like reading it. It's not like I was going to put it down, but I was just like, God, this is truly awful. Like it's truly awful. And I just haven't, I cannot think of another short story that we've read where I've thought that. There's been horrible things that have happened, but maybe it's the way they're artistically sort of portrayed or whatever. Maybe it's just that whatever's actually happening is not nearly as gory and horrible. But yeah, this is a story with multiple murders in it. And it had to be that level of gore because it was that level of gore for Dahmer to understand what about it interested him. Can't just gloss over something like that. This was not a guy that like got off on strangling women. He was trapping young men and turning them into sex slaves through lobotomies. Like that's so specific. You can't just gloss over that. You have to really interrogate it and see it to have any sort of like appreciation for one, how horrific it really is, and two, like why it might interest him.
Yeah. And unfortunately, the details of like how he can possibly even attempt to accomplish that is part of it.
Yeah.
That is what makes it horrifying because he has to do this in a really terrible way.
Yeah. So I've talked about this in like the workshop before, and I'm pretty sure on the podcast, so I can't think of like which story I would have related it to. I think it's mostly, I've talked about this when people have been critical about, say, like a white male writer trying to write from any other person's perspective, especially like of the opposite gender or a minority, or even like someone with a different like sexual orientation or identity. They get a lot of heat for it, and I appreciate why. But usually my take is always that it might be horribly written and it might not be the writer you want to hear it from. It might be absolute trash. But I think the exercise for any writer to empathize and try to understand someone that is wildly different from them is a really noble endeavor, because I think that that is what unites us as humans.
Yeah.
I think the more you try to stretch your own thinking and try to imagine what it's like to be someone else, like that's how we become a more kind and empathetic society, you know? So I'm not saying that all white men out there should start writing like black lesbians. Please don't. But just like Joyce Carol Oates is trying to do something here that a lot of people would say like is maybe the opposite of noble, that's fine. But I don't want any writer to think that there's something off limits in terms of trying to understand another human, you know?
Yeah.
You might poorly execute it and you might be told rightly not to do it again because you might get so many things wrong and it just might not be for you to be the author that gets the validation for it.
This is the kind of thing for writers that it has to be judged by the achievement. A lot of writing you can judge by the attempt, but if you achieve a really powerful, really accurate, clear, empathetic portrayal of something that's like it's not you, that's what makes it okay. You have to actually do it right.
Yeah, right.
But there's no way you're going to do it right unless you try. You keep those in your drawer if you fail. But
yeah.
Like this, I think she has succeeded in getting into the head of whatever version of this monster she'd created. Like this is not how Jeffrey Dahmer himself would have written it. There's absolutely no doubt that he had some other experience. But this is a version of something like him that is right.
Right.
And you can do that with any kind of experience if you work at it. You have to really work at it. It's almost like method acting. You know, you have to put yourself in that headspace and find it within yourself. What would the world be like if this were how I was living? And lose yourself in it in a certain way so that you can write it down in an accurate kind of, accurate's the wrong word, but
like believable.
Not merely believable, because the cliches can come from believable, but
Somehow
like
authentic.
authentic. Authentic is the word, right word. Yeah.
What's your takeaway?
My takeaway is the thing I talked about, menace. It's like I'm trying to think about what makes stories have forward momentum, what makes them into the river you get swept away by. And
Right.
for this one, I felt like it was this dawning menace, that sense of foreboding, like you described it, makes you grip the edges of the page and flip them quickly and try to get to the end. It's like, how far is this going to go? What kind of monster is this? And you don't realize the monster in the beginning. You just get this sense of like offness, but then it
Right.
builds and builds and builds and builds. And that is a way to get a person to keep reading. And there are many, many ways to do that. And we should remind ourselves that it's not always about what happens next. It's not always about the simple kind of like conflict or even a character trying to get what they want. There's different ways for those kinds of things to be twisted, but they still drive forward momentum,
Yeah.
which I believe I talked about an hour and a half ago whenever we started this recording.
Yeah, sorry, it's been a minute. Thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed this episode, consider joining our Patreon. Your support helps us keep the show running. Find out more at patreon.com/whyisthisgoodpodcast. And for industry news, writing tips, and great short fiction, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/NaplesWritersWorkshop. You can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter at napleswritersworkshop.com.